Behavioral Health Today, a podcast by Triad Behavioral Health, covering trending topics in behavioral and mental health. This podcast is designed to share unique and relevant topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today. I'm Dr. Graham Taylor, and today with me is Dr. Kelly Posner-Gerstenhaber. She's the professor of psychiatry at Columbia University and is the founder and director of the Columbia Lighthouse Project, a center for suicide risk assessment at Columbia University. She's the lead author of the Columbia Scale, or the Columbia Suicide Severity Rating Scale, which is a set of simple, plain language questions that anyone can ask to determine who is at risk and help connect them to care. The Columbia Scale is a proven tool to identify risk for suicide, assess the severity and the immediacy of that risk, and gauge the level of support that the person needs. Kelly's work has been included in the compendium of the most important research in the history in the study of suicide. Because of her work, in 2018, she was awarded the Secretary of Defense Medal for Exceptional Public Service. Kelly, it's so nice to have you with us today. Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, and thanks for being here with us.
Graham, I'm excited to be here with you, you know, for a few reasons, actually. The behavioral health frontline workers across this nation are so vital, particularly now what we're going through in these unprecedented times. And also, because of such unprecedented uncertainty, it's really nice to be able to share any kind of tools or information that will help.
Well, I would agree with that. I mean, right now we're talking about suicide already being a significant issue nationally for us, and actually worldwide too. I know some of the stats around that even worldwide, but for us in the United States here, particularly with COVID coming up right now, I know some of the crisis proportions are quite significant. In setting the frame and then in being able to come into the Columbia Scale and the work you're doing, also with the Columbia Lighthouse Project, give us kind of a 10,000 foot view right now as a start of what we're looking at in terms of the suicide, what I'm going to call pandemic, actually. Put that into a kind of a context and framework for us, would you please?
Absolutely. Let me just start by saying suicide is a problem of our shared humanity. But the very good news is that it is our one preventable cause of death. But it is this tragic paradox that takes more firemen than fire, more police than crime, more soldiers than combat, more lives than car accidents. Yeah. Did you know, Graham, it's the number one cause of death in adolescent girls across the globe, the second leading cause of death in 10 to 24-year-olds. You know, it actually accounts for more death than war, homicide, and natural disasters combined.
Yeah.
So, you know, and by the way, the biggest cause of suicide is this treatable medical illness called depression. But we don't think of depression like we think of cancer. And depression is the most debilitating disease in the world. Touches more people, costs humanity more than anything.
Yeah, I agree with you. What I liked about your start is that this is a preventable incident, that if we know what we can look for, if we can help each other understand if those things are occurring within ourselves, what to look for, how to name it. A lot of times we just simply don't know what we don't know about what we're dealing with or even looking at. So yeah, the numbers and the significance of it, the death rate around it, particularly our most vulnerable population, our young people, women, like you talked about, young ladies going through this. How have you come to understand this whole area of mental health?
Yeah, this is one of the most important things that we know we need to express to the nation and certainly communities all over the globe and the people trying to treat and prevent this preventable loss of life, right? And when I said it's preventable, what do I mean? We've learned two things in all this work. You know, I just started to say that the biggest cause of suicide is this treatable medical illness called depression, but we don't think of depression like we think of cancer. You know, you would never hear the word choice when it comes to cancer. And that stigma, I'm weak if I ask for help, you know, this is not a real illness. Guess what that does? It prevents up to 75% of people from getting these simple life-saving medicines that they need. Do you know that since we have modern antidepressants, Prozac, Paxil, the suicide rate has dropped dramatically across the world, across ages, reversing a trend prior to their introduction. And importantly, what we know is that not treating depression is what kills people. Do you know, Graham, autopsy studies are invariably associated with no treatment or lack of compliance. So there's so many examples. You know, I work with lots of different communities across the world. And one of them, for example, is pilots, you know, airlines. They brought me out to give our work to the pilots and the flight attendants. And did you know that before 2010, you couldn't have depression and keep your license? You could have any other kind of medical illness.
Yeah.
But now there are 5 medicines. Did you know that one of the major airlines had 8 suicides in 15 months? These are not the pilots flying our planes. These are the pilots out on disability who have the same chemical issues that we all do.
You know what I like that you're doing is you're kind of broadening our perspective on how to look at this. If we just stay kind of myopic in looking at just suicide rather than maybe some of the contributing factors that come into, you know, into it as well, depression being the most significant piece. And the hardest part about depression is a lot of people don't even know that they're depressed, because as depression, you know, evolves over the course of someone's life, it's very subtle. It doesn't happen just tomorrow. You don't wake up depressed. It's a progressive process that a lot of people miss some of the signs and symptoms. And they don't even know they're depressed. Life just becomes, you know, kind of bleak, kind of dark, and they lose, you know, pleasure for joy and interest in the things they normally do, a little less motivated, a little more fatigued. Yep. And before they know it, they're down this slippery slope. And at some point, for some, in depression, the pain gets so great. People I've worked with that have survived suicide basically said to me, Graham, I didn't want to kill myself. I didn't want to die. I just wanted the pain to stop. And I'm sure we can get into that just a little bit later on. But the idea that they're in this state that leads to the suicide, there's such a larger, more important contextual understanding that can be had that explains so many things, doesn't it?
It does. It's larger and it's contextual, but on some level, it's very simple, right? If you had asthma, you'd have an inhaler. If you had an infection, you'd have an antibiotic. We know this is a very basic chemical illness. And as I said, it touches more people across the globe, number one cause of global disability. But you're right. The issue is that as much as it touches everyone, and it does not discriminate, black, white, rich, poor, celebrity, teacher, that we know that many people won't necessarily have the will to come to us. The other thing we've learned about how this is preventable, how we prevent suicide, is we have to go find the people suffering in silence. Did you know, Graham, that 50% of people who die by suicide have seen their primary care doctor the month before they die?
I know.
We should be asking these questions the way we monitor for blood pressure. Did you know that many adolescents who show up to the emergency department who've tried to take their own lives are not there for psychiatric reasons? But let me just tell you something. What we also have learned, and the thing I think has made us really be able to move the needle, is that we have to have that blood pressure concept well beyond the doctor's office, because many people never get to the doctor. So do you know that it's the number one cause of death in construction workers? Mm. And we've been talking to the unions because we should ask the questions. The safety checks in the morning maybe will be more than the hard hat. It'll be the Columbia protocol. We know that we have to find people where they work, live, and thrive.
Yeah. I really like that perspective. It's the first thing you do. You jump on the scale with your doc or they take your temperature. Why not ask, by the way, have you experienced any, you know, depression, or have you felt down lately? I want to get into the Columbia scale now and talk about how you are asking questions in a very unique and very effective way. But staying with the point just for a moment, this is doable. I think a lot more docs, you know, are having this part of their screening. I've seen it in with my physician. I've seen it in some of the medical centers where I've worked. More and more, it's becoming a part of it. But I love the idea of bringing it into the construction site. I love the idea of bringing it into the airlines. Why not bring it into every part of our lives and raise awareness in a way that says, hey, let's catch this early, kind of that early detection, early intervention idea. So
exactly. And not only let's, it's so exciting how many people have already shown that this is how we can save lives. Graham, it's such an empowering story. But not just for the doctor, for the policeman and the school. Yeah. There's actually a state that has policy for the janitor, you know? Right. And that's exciting that everybody can be part of the solution.
Yeah, I love that. So we're kind of teeing everything up right here to jump into the Columbia scale. Let's talk about what makes this unique and what sets this apart and what makes it such a usable tool?
Yeah, well, let me tell you how we actually got here. You know, we were helping run for NIMH the first treatment of adolescents who said a tempter study, even though it's the second or third leading cause of death. We'd never had a large intervention trial to look at how to help them. So in this important national effort, we had every questionnaire for suicide and depression. And all these experts said, you know what, there's not anything to do this, to ask about suicidal thoughts and behavior, to look at the full range, to track change. So we created it to fill this gaping hole in the field that had never been filled before. And what did we create, and why has it become the global language, right? First thing, it's the first time we have evidence-based thresholds for imminent risk. You know, we didn't know who to worry about before. So right. That policeman had to take everybody to the hospital. The ED doc had to put everybody in that ED hold room. And by the way, that's not just about clogging the system. You know what else that's about? It's about shutting that person down from treatment they actually need it. So it's very exciting. These questions, they're prescriptive enough for the non-professional. So the policeman has a very prescriptive formula for the 1% that he needs to take to the hospital, but flexible enough for the professional to just use their judgment. One of the other reasons why these questions, these simple set of questions that can be in everybody's hands, has really moved the needle is it's the first time we're asking about all suicidal behaviors. You know, if you were lucky, you would get asked about a suicide attempt and then you missed the person that bought the gun yesterday or wrote the suicide note or collected the pills. Things we absolutely cannot afford to miss. And you know, Graham, you know what our science has shown us? That of that 1%, 87% of serious suicidal behaviors that people engage in were these things we were never asking about before.
Yes,
and
exactly.
They're all equally predictive. Can you imagine?
Exactly.
But
yeah,
that's exciting. And as I said, you don't have to be a mental health professional to administer it. You know, before, people didn't know what questions to ask. They didn't know what to do with the answers. And certainly a parent or a security guard didn't think that they could ask. So that's really critical because we know that is one of the reasons we haven't been able to prevent suicide. And what's really exciting is what we've shown we can do. You know, I said all 50 states. You know how many states have said since using the Columbia, we've lowered suicide? You know, Centerstone is the largest provider of community behavioral health in the United States. They reduced suicide 65% in the first 20 months in just one state. Guess what else they did? They reduced emergency department recidivism from 40% to 7%.
Yeah, this
and, you know,
works,
just to bring this point home, the Undersecretary of Defense wrote this urgent memo that's what we have to do. And the first ones to test it out were the Marines, legal assistants, financial aid counselors, clergy. It helped them achieve a 22% reduction in suicide that year, along with domestic violence and other very important outcomes.
Yeah, what I like about that, as you frame it, one, how exciting are those numbers? Those are just so significant. Again, therein lies the hope that this is something that we can address. What I liked your language about earlier, you said, we get to make this as common as, you know, what's your blood pressure, what's your heart rate, what's your temperature. And we get to have this global language that we all get to talk about it in this way. But what I like is that it sounds like, and I want to maybe just ask a little bit more about the scale itself, but it sounds like there's two sides to this coin. On the one hand, it's going to be a person being questioned in a way that allows them to provide some information that we can identify some really clear markers that we can then jump on. But also what's most difficult a lot of times is for people to ask the questions. They're afraid to ask, or they don't even know what to say, or, hey, what if I ask and I tip the scale and I'm the reason for someone, you know, acting out? Or if I do ask and I do find something out, like you just said, what do I do then? So maybe I just don't ask. So it sounds like it's got two sides, one for the practitioner or the person or the manager or the school teacher, whoever it may be, being able to ask these things in very approachable ways, but for people to then also hear some signs and symptoms that for them are going to be ideally easily identifiable and then maybe allow a necessary conversation to occur. So tell me about the scale a little bit. What are some of the things that you find being able to be asked and how they presented?
Yeah, what I wanted to not forget to say is, you're absolutely right when you're saying now somebody can figure out the signs to right. connect people to the care they need. That's right. one of the most important reasons why the Columbia has had the impact it has, because it's connecting the right people to the right. care they need. And every Columbia has next steps on it. So the high-risk people definitely have to get a further evaluation and be kept safe. So the questions, the simple that. Questions, as you just asked me, are, have you wished you were dead, or have you actually had thoughts of killing yourself? And yep. only if that one is yes, do they get asked the next few questions. Got have it. You thought about how you might do this? Have you had these thoughts and had some intention of acting on them? Or have you started to work out or worked out the details of how to kill yourself? And that intent to act, that's where we know risk jumps 100%. So you say, you know, somebody would say, I thought I could take pills, I could jump off the bridge, but I never do anything about it. When you get a yes to that question, I don't know if I'm going to do something about it. And then the behavior question, have you started to do anything, prepared to do anything, you know, to end your life with the examples? And in an ED triage setting or anywhere else, it's only two questions. And if two is yes, 3, 4, and 5, right? So we can identify who's at risk. You know, people didn't know what questions to ask. They didn't know if asking would cause somebody to be suicidal. Actually, it's the opposite. One of the authors on the Columbia, exactly. Dr. Gould, had the seminal article in JAMA that it not only doesn't cause them to be suicidal, it doesn't even cause distress. But the other thing people were concerned about, Graham, was liability. We don't have a perfect formula. We may never have a perfect formula. How can I ask? What if something happens? So that's malpractice right. attorneys have written for a long time, if you ask these questions, you're protected, because it has more science than we've ever seen, 120 studies. But also, you know, the Navy non-mental health providers said it also helps with the internal liability. At least you knew you did everything you could. And before I forget, I want to tell you that that liability is not just for healthcare. You know, that when MIT had a suicide, like every university does, the Supreme Court brief mentioned the Columbia. You know, police all over say now we don't have to take somebody to a hospital unnecessarily. We have something to hang our hat on. Yes. And that really frees people up to be able to ask.
Really good. Do you have a kind of a hallmark story of a time when you've seen somebody, you know, kind of go through this, and you've seen them deviate from a path that could have been otherwise very catastrophic and very permanent? Any story stand out to you?
I have a recent story that really just, I think, is incredibly moving and incredibly hopeful. So, you know, one of the things that the Columbia is often used for is also its connection to reducing gun deaths and actually gun violence. So, you know that 2/3 of gun deaths are suicide. And I always say that person that goes up to that gun counter to buy that gun does not want to die and does not know there's help. And we know that 90% of shooters have suicidal issues. And I said this a long time ago, let's screen and ask a few questions and find people who need help before it's too late. Yeah. So fast forward to the tragedy of Parkland. I was introduced to who has become my very good friend and partner, Ryan Petty. Okay. He lost his daughter at Parkland. She was one of the 17 massacred that day.
Oh my.
And he speaks about guns less than he speaks about early identification with the Columbia Protocol.
Yes.
And I got to give the lead presentation to the Senate after Parkland, but he told a story. You remember when they had suicides last year?
Yes.
And because with mass traumas, very often, right, suicide risk goes up, just like we're dealing with now.
Yes.
So he told a story about one of the students that was at Parkland that day, went on to graduate and was in college in Utah. And he called up Ryan, the dad of his friend, and he said, Mr. Petty, I've been frozen for a year. I can't go to class. I just can't function. I don't know what to do. So Ryan did the Columbia with him over the phone. And he stayed with him on the phone and called the crisis line and stayed with him while he spoke to the crisis line. And he knew he was at risk from the Columbia, and he called him an Uber. Ryan was in Florida and he was in Utah, and he called him an Uber. He got in the Uber and he took him to the hospital.
I love it.
And I just love that story on so many levels.
That's a great story. Yeah, right there. And you know, the thing about that to me is that is so doable. We can be doing that.
Exactly.
On such a larger scale. This is not, you know, rocket science. This is something
exactly.
that we can bring down to a very relational level, a very safe level,
yep.
and just with a couple of few questions, begin to allow someone to open up an area of their life that they need to talk about, want to talk about. They're not going to shut down more times than not. Like you just said, it doesn't have distress related to it when you bring it up. People are afraid that, oh, I'm going to set them off and they're going to go, no, they're not.
Yep.
They're going to want to open up and talk exactly. about this as you listen
intently. Exactly. They want to yeah. be asked.
Yes, they do.
Exactly.
They do.
And you know what? I want to mention something that is critical and important all the time, but really particularly important right now. You know, I said it takes more firemen than fire, more police than crime, right? Think about all the frontline workers
yes.
that are out there every day saving people's lives and
yeah.
who are also at risk. So when
yes.
when a policeman or a fireman does it, even before COVID, you know, they're not just doing it in their job. They have Columbia cards. Ask your fellow fireman, ask your fellow officer, okay? It's really become a vital part of health and wellness for employees and their families. When I did that piece, a piece recently on CNN during COVID, the American Medical Association reached out the next day and said, you know, we of course know the Columbia, but yes, how do we get it in every
yeah.
doctor's hands?
Yeah.
And it's so important for all the people listening here that we must take care of ourselves. You know,
yes.
frontline workers, doctors, caregivers, people whose job it is to take care of other people often feel that they can't take care of themselves, that they have
that's
to
right.
be invincible and they have to be strong for everybody else. And that's one of the stigmatizing barriers that we must break down. And you know what? When we normalize it like that, that helps everybody. And the other thing we know is that from other mass traumas, that helping others, that actually asking these questions will be helpful to yourself. It will help you heal.
Agreed.
And it will help you connect. And that's another thing I don't want to forget to mention. It's so important. Connecting. Do you know that having a common language is an intervention in and of itself? It builds cohesion,
yeah.
it builds connectedness. And the CDC tells us that connecting is one of the most important things we can do
absolutely.
To prevent suicide. And lest you doubt the potency of that, there
yeah.
was a study that showed that loneliness, the opposite of connecting, is equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Did you know that? More lethal than
that.
Heart disease and obesity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm seeing it right now with the, you know, mandated isolations and the quarantines, and basically we're
yes,
setting ourselves up
exactly.
and putting ourselves into an arena where these things are going to be manifest, you know, for sure. Hey, Kelly, before we close, I'd love to just have you provide us and our listeners with some resources and ways to access the scale and some other information that you would like them to have as a takeaway from our podcast today.
Yes, it's important for all the listeners to know that there's an app, both on Android and Apple. Just look up the Columbia Protocol. And
okay.
our website, cssrs.columbia.edu, it has many, many vast resources. And we are always there 24/7 to be helpful to individuals, to communities, to institutions. And I'd like to say one more thing, that this not only touches everybody, but 135 people are affected by every death, and those effects linger across generations because of that silence that follows. But when we learn to just ask, right, we kind of break that down. And, you know, one point in history, we learned to wash hands, and that helped us save lives, right? And
that's right.
we can do this. And it has so many wonderful secondary gains. You know, the country of Israel, the people who are in charge of prevention, said not only saves millions of lives, but literally has changed the way we live our lives, breaking down barriers that have been built up over thousands of years. So now the third generation Holocaust survivor who didn't have a voice does. And we can think about that right now and use that analogy to help mitigate and empower from some of the pretty devastating, scary uncertainty that we're going through right now.
And therein lies really truly the message of hope, and ideally it's going to be emboldening, you know, for us to take some next steps. So again, Kelly, thank
yes.
you so much. It's been great to be with you today. You're awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Graham. You too.
Thank you. And for those listening in, thanks for joining us today. And we will look forward to having you join us next time. on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tried Behavioral Health Network, all rights reserved.